house.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show, Je Savais Pas. I'm your host, Esther Tyree, and in the studio with me today is Clay Rose, a musician, and he's got lots of fascinating things to share about why he's in Louisiana. Anyway, and it's the week before Mardi Gras, so I hope everybody's been having a good February, and thank you for tuning in and listening. So welcome, Clay, to the show, and thank you for making time to come in and share.
Thanks for having me, Esther.
It was fun before the show got started talking about how you found out about Louisiana because you were born and raised in Colorado.
Kind of back and forth between Colorado and Tennessee. My mom lived in Tennessee. She was a songwriter in Nashville, and my dad lived up in the mountains in Colorado, and he was a truck driver.
Cool. Yeah. So, at what point did you get intrigued by the guitar? Did you hear somebody play? Did somebody in your family play? Or did you just kind of see it one day and go, I want to do that?
Well, my mom, like I said, was a songwriter, and I grew up, you know, at picks on people's front porches or writer's night in Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
My mom would go to those and I'd see her play with her band, but none of that really got me hooked on the guitar or thinking about playing it myself. I think what did it for me was discovering Leonard Cohen at a very young age, his first album, and the way that he fingerpicked the nylon string guitar really resonated deeply, like in my heart. And I wanted to be able to make that sound.
So then from there you went to your parents and said, I gotta do this.
Yeah, well, I kind of stole my dad's guitar then. He had a steel string and a nylon string, and he seemed to play the steel string more anyway, so I stole that nylon from him, and I dove in deep, and I stayed with it for probably like 5 to 8 hours a day.
Wow.
You know, I didn't like people teaching me things. I wasn't a very good student.
I got to figure it out myself.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's how I did it for the first 5 or 6 years.
Okay. And then you had somebody sort of come along and say, well, that's good because that's going to help you play, and maybe you need to change this because that's going to get you a dead end because of tension?
There was a fella, his name was Yoshi, and he was a Japanese classical guitarist in Boulder, Colorado, where I was living. And he used to play out on the street, and I would come and sit down next to him and watch him play. And eventually he asked me, you know, because I was there all the time watching him play.
Yeah.
So he asked me if I played, and I said, yeah, and told him I was self-taught. And he asked me to play him something. So I played him something, and he did exactly that. Like, oh, well, that's very creative, and that's really good, and this is really bad, and you're going to get arthritis if you keep doing that. And so he took me back to his apartment and gave me a proper guitar lesson. And I learned a lot about form and, you know, from him. But once he started getting into these are the notes that go good together and these are the notes that don't go good together and these are the rules, then I was done with them. I don't like rules. I especially don't like rules in music. I think anything goes, you know, if it feels good.
Okay. So at what point then did you sort of begin to venture into the songwriting part of
that? That was immediately. Like as soon as I learned three chords, I wrote a song with them. I was writing poetry before I ever picked up an instrument. I started writing poetry probably at like 12, and I didn't know that's what it was at the time. It was just words on a page and a way to like you know, exercise the demons, as it were. And then when I heard Leonard Cohen, it all kind of made sense. I've been working on half of the pie, and I knew that the classical guitar was the other half. So
cool. Yeah, it's always fascinating to hear stories about how, you know, somebody says they stumble along something and then they kind of go in this direction and then have this come along and kind of steers them in this direction and then it opens up these doors. Do you remember that first song?
No.
Because you have your guitar, so it'd be kind of fun to...
I do not remember. I remember it was called Free. And it was D, A, and G were the only chords in it, but mm-hmm. I don't remember anything beyond that. I know I strummed it hard, and I half screamed it, and I felt free.
Well, there you go. All right, but then also too, like, share with the listener how you ended up here in Lafayette, because you were telling me about the that band swap in the States. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, so I started a band called Gasoline Lollipops some years back.
We'll have to get back to how you got that name, because it's kind of fascinating.
In Colorado, and I guess it was four or five years ago, we got signed to this nonprofit incubation program. It was a musician's incubation program where they're supposed to teach you how to be self-managed and how to book and promote and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And as part of that program, they had a band swap. And so each band that was signed to them would get swapped to a different state, mm-hmm. and then a band from that state would come to Colorado. And the band we got partnered with was Bonsoir Catin out of Lafayette, Louisiana.
Neato.
And so they came up, and we played a bunch of shows with them in our stomping ground. And then we came down here and played with them at the Blue Moon and then in the town square there as part of a festival that was happening.
Fun. And then you're also in Dockside Studios recording.
We are now, because we fell in love with this place. And ever since that band swap, I've just been looking for an excuse to come down here. So when we were shopping around for studios to record the new record at, that's when I found out about Dockside, and the search stopped right there. Yeah. I was like, that's it, we're going.
Yep, that's oftentimes what happens, you know, when people get to Louisiana and or parts of it. And one of the things I've heard is, you know, you go visit the swamp and you get stuck.
Well, it's the
and
people.
Then I've heard lots of fun things too about Dockside Studios. So that's
really Dockside
cool.
is a musician's like playground. It's amazing, but really the people down here are what got us stuck on the place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're used to walking around in cities where people don't look each other in the eye, and they certainly don't say hello. And when we came down here, it was like every single person just greeted us with open arms, and it was so warm, you know. So, yeah, I want more of that. It's infectious.
It's a good infection.
Yeah.
So, okay, so let's go back and how many in the band, and what prompted the name Gasoline Lollipops?
It was actually when I was 17, and I was hanging out with my girlfriend and some other friends in Tennessee, and we were out in the woods, and we were all ingesting LSD, and we were having a game called like band names, right, where you just try to think of the craziest band names.
Mm-hmm.
And my ex-girlfriend came up with the name Gasoline Lollipops, and at the time, nobody there was actually in a band or even close to being in a band. I had just learned, you know, the first three chords on guitar.
Mm-hmm.
But when I heard that name, I stowed it away, and I thought, someday I'm going to have a band, and I'm going to name it that. And it was probably 10 years later that I actually formed the band and named it that. And I had no idea what it meant other than it sounded cool, you know. But I think we've kind of grown into the name in the sense that the music we play is kind of sweet and kind of explosive at the same time. It's like high-octane folk music or something. But this new record there's more soul in it, mm-hmm. than our previous stuff.
Okay. So this is your, second, third?
This would be our fifth.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So then how many people in the band?
Right now there's five of us.
Yeah. So do you on guitar?
Me on, acoustic. And then we have a Telecaster player, Don Ambori. And then Scott Coulter is playing keyboards, mm-hmm. organ, and piano. And then Bad Brad Morse is on bass, upright, and electric. And
cool.
then Kevin Matthews on drums.
Neato. So then do y'all all collaborate in writing songs? Or just is it like you bring the song and then they kind of say, well, I feel like this part, I can play this part and add to it?
Up until this album, I wrote all the music, mm-hmm. and they would, you know, help arrange it. But this is the first album where we co-wrote a lot of these songs together, and it was my first time ever co-writing anything with anybody. And I brought my mom in on the project because my mom is a songwriter. She wrote a song that Willie Nelson picked up,
mm-hmm.
Back in the day, which bought her a farm in Arkansas.
Neato.
And, but she hadn't written anything in 20 years. And so I asked her if she would help me co-write some of these songs, and she came out to Colorado, and man, could she still write. As soon as you popped the cork on that bottle, it was like I couldn't write the music fast enough for the lyrics that she was writing.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, again, you have your guitar. Is there a song from one of the first recordings that you want to share? And
yeah,
then
sure.
Kind of show your progression as a player and a singer-songwriter?
Yeah, sure. I'll do that. This would be the first song on the first album.
Okay.
And it's the title track. It's called Dawn. Dawn opened my window, came into my room stumbling, sent my alphabet block, dream castle crumbling, fumbling for the light switch, singing in pitch with the lark. She moves slow and graceful, pulling the stitch that holds me to the dark. I stood stark and bare against the morning like a babe, the cool air bewildering like freedom on a slave. I was saved beyond all reckoning or repair. She moves slow and graceful, killing with kindness the nightmare. My window came into my room stumbling, sent my alphabet block, dream castle crumbling, fumbling for the light switch, singing in pitch with the lark.
Fun. So in your playing, do you do both finger picking and strumming, or
I do, yeah.
You kind of just moved on to strumming?
It got less and less finger picking as mm-hmm. the band became more and more rock and roll. But I still write songs for myself that are finger picking.
Okay, neato. So then, what have you learned? Because I had another question that just kind of popped out of my brain. What are some of the things you've learned in that journey as a songwriter and a player and chords and chord progressions and picking versus strumming and
musically
working with the band?
Mm-hmm. Well, my band, everybody in my band is a music school grad, so they all know a lot about mm-hmm. music. And it's I've learned a lot of chords from them that mm-hmm. I'm appreciative for, but still I'm very resistant to learning rules or theory or any of that. And it's purely, it might be superstitious, but I took one semester at music school and mm-hmm. I dropped out because it was, for me, songwriting is a spiritual experience, and mm-hmm. I tap into something bigger than myself, and I don't understand it. I don't know what it is or where they come from, but the songs come in and I can't afford to analyze them as they're coming. It's all I can do just to write them down and record them as fast as I can. And I feel like anything that my brain starts adding to the song at that point takes away from the song, and it's a liability. So if I'm having all these rules and theories and the song's coming in and it's not matching the rules and theories that mm-hmm. I was taught in school, it's going to hinder the flow of the song coming through me. So I feel like it's a really important asset for a lead instrumentalist mm-hmm. to have music theory and a good knowledge of all that. I don't necessarily think that that's true for a songwriter.
Well, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Je Savais Pas, and my guest today is Clay Rose, sharing his journey as a musician, guitar player, singer, songwriter, and his band Gasoline Lollipops. They're in town recording at Dockside Studio. So do you have an example of one where you finger pick that you want to share?
Yeah, sure. Let's see here. This is one that me and my mom wrote together. It's called I Love You. This is pre-recorded, right?
Keep playing.
I can't remember the words.
That's okay.
It's early right now, isn't it? What time is it? It's like 6 a.m.
No, it's not.
I think it's 6 a.m.
It feels like that in your head.
Okay. I'm not going to be able to play that one.
Okay, well, you can switch it out.
Okay. Oh, all right. Well, here we go. Let me see. This song is called Longest Night. I'm trying to do a change for the Kansas Turnpike toll. I'm trying to dig up faith, strength left in your soul. These county lines that flash by with every cigarette. Yeah, this is the longest night that I've had to drive through yet. Every hotel room smells like death. The clouds across the moon move slow like your breath. And I wonder why the good times were so easy to forget. Yeah, this is the longest night that I've had to drive through. Them fog lights come on with the rain. Missouri's gone, but not the pain. I'm praying to God now, but I don't know if He exists. Well, what else could I do for you on a night like this? Your heart still pumps blood. I wish that it pumped hope. I'm trying to bring you love at the end of your rope. I'm blowing back these speed limit signs just trying to outrun regret. Yeah, this is the longest night I've had to drive through yet. Ooh. Yeah, this is the longest night I've had to drive through yet. Yeah, this is the longest night that I've had yet. Yeah, this is the longest night I've had to drive through yet.
Wow, nice. So you mentioned that the song comes to you, you get the words and the melody at the same time?
A lot of times, it seems like my church, as far as songwriting goes, is the highway. Mm-hmm. So when I'm driving, and and they'll come at the same time usually, and so I start singing it to myself. I have to sing it over and over and over again, so I still remember it when I get to the next truck stop and write it down.
That's why they have voice memos on the phones now.
Nowadays, yeah, it's great. Back in the old days,
I know, right? I
literally would have a spiral bound notebook on the steering wheel, and I'm trying to write down lyrics while I'm steering. Very dangerous.
Yeah, before texting and driving, there was steering and songwriting.
Yep.
So then is there a challenge when you get like to a place where you actually have the time to get your guitar out and figuring out from the melody what chords you need, or does it just...
Yeah, there is a challenge, and that's...
Have you ever sort of had to go, well, it doesn't work in that range, let me modulate it down? Or
yeah, and it usually changes a little bit from what it is in my head to the mm-hmm. guitar. But that's also something I've learned, is to have a loose grip on it and let it change as it needs to, from even from the mind to the paper, mm-hmm. and from the paper to the guitar. It's going to move around a bit, and then it's going to continue moving around for the first 6 months that I'm playing it, you mm-hmm. know.
Yeah, that seems to be a common thread and theme among, especially the musicians. I mean, I think I've had writers kind of say the same thing, that they have a project and they think it's done, and then they kind of put it to the side, and then something pops into their head and go, oh, let me add that. And yeah, that's one of the things about art, and I love that you said you sort of have to let it go and let it be what it wants to be. And I think so many times some of our struggles as like maybe a beginning artist is thinking it's got to be this way, and this is what's in my head, and then sort of hanging on to it. And you know, another one of my guests just kind of gave it the best description. She's like, oh, you can let me, I get to come in and talk about how my baby's got born. It's like, you know what?
Yeah.
That's really true. You know, you have that, you conceive the idea, but once it's there, it's like you basically just kind of have to let it go and grow and be what it's going to be.
Yeah, absolutely.
So in picking, do you sort of experiment with different patterns? Or
yeah,
does that kind of come with the melody? You kind of say, well, it sounds like I need to do this thing with my fingers.
Picking patterns, that's a hobby of mine, is sitting there. And that's like as mathematical as I'll get with with songwriting or anything musical. I know that theory's all about math, but closest I get is sitting there playing with patterns, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I like finding patterns that are completely unnatural to me, that are just cumbersome and weird and awkward, and then I'll just sit there doing it over and over and over again until my hand just flows on it. And some of them are just so weird, I can't imagine writing a song to it. You know, it's just a practice in discomfort, really. But some of them, they're usually kind of weird time signatures and stuff. But
mm-hmm.
It's a good practice for me.
So, yeah, it's a good way to stretch.
Yeah.
So what are some ways that you recognized that you've grown or kind of maybe given yourself challenges to expand your ability as a songwriter and as a musician?
Well, for me, it's really important to have multiple musical projects going,
mm-hmm.
because otherwise I tend to, a lot of songs get thrown away if I don't have a place for them to live. You know, a song will be trying to come through me and I go, well, what is that? That's like an 80s pop song. How or why would I ever sing that song?
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't even give it a chance, right? But like, for instance, I have Gasoline Lollipops, which is sort of an Americana roots rock band.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have this other band called The Widow's Bane, and we play Eastern European klezmer music and sea shanties.
Oh, wow.
And like old field hollers and stuff mm-hmm. like that. And then my solo stuff is just, it's really weird. It goes all over the place. A lot of Leonard Cohen type mm-hmm. finger picking minor key stuff. And as new songs start coming to me that don't live in any of those genres, I'm gonna have to form a new band. Right now, the next band that I'm thinking of starting is gonna be called Viva La Diva, and we're all gonna dress in drag and play like garage rock covers of Beyonce and Britney Spears. I love all kinds of music.
That's funny. So somebody listening, thinking, I've kind of had the idea, I've seen guitar players, I'm interested. What would be some things you'd suggest to inspire them or encourage them to get started?
Playing?
Yeah. Or just like even learning how to play.
Listen. Just listen. Listen to as much as you can. And really listen to genres that you have no interest in listening to,
mm-hmm.
because my take on Eastern European klezmer, because mm-hmm. I've never actually studied the music before,
right.
When I go to play it, it sounds completely new. Even if it's my very best attempt to sound exactly like Eastern European klezmer, I'm never going to get there, right, without going to school for it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what makes what I'm doing unique, I think. And because I don't have the tools to fully replicate something, so it's always going to be my interpretation of it. Same thing if I'm listening to top 40 country music and I sit down and try to write a top 40 country song, it's just not going to sound like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to sound like something very new.
Yeah. Well, it goes back to what you said before, just kind of, get it started, but then let it be and grow.
Yeah.
So other than Leonard Cohen, who are some other inspirational musicians that you observe or watch or listen to in order to get ideas or inspire yourself or encourage yourself to try something new or to stretch your ability into a new territory or region?
I go to different places for different things.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I start feeling like I'm writing inside a box,
mm-hmm.
and all my songs start sounding the same. And eventually I'll get angry. It'll make me angry. And then I'll listen to like Violent Femmes or or Operation Ivy or some really energetic, rebellious music. And mm-hmm. it'll help break me out of that. But other times, if I'm feeling, atrophied and I just can't write at all,
mm-hmm.
then I'll listen to things like Jason Isbell is really great at
mm-hmm.
breaking me out, because he's someone that I look up to, but he's also within reach. He's human to me, you know, whereas someone like Leonard Cohen is not even human to me. Like, I can't touch him. I could never touch him.
Yeah.
But Jason Isbell, I feel like he's there. He's within view.
That level is attainable. Well,
yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you, Clay, for being in today and sharing a little bit of your journey.
Thanks so much for having me.
And your songs. And you've been listening to Je Savais Pas, a production of KRVS, brought to you as a public service of the University of Louisiana at Lafayette, which joins you in support of this station. This is KRVS 88.7 FM Lafayette, Lake Charles, online at krvs.org. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in and listening, and have a great week and a safe Mardi Gras.
We all make mistakes in life. Si tu avais manqué la dernière Franco Mix, c'est OK. Tu peux m'écouter this Thursday at 9 p.m. seulement sur KRVS 88.7 avec Drake Benoit LeBlanc. Et c'est formidable.
Hello, this is Lee, your man behind the mic. Many styles of big band and jazz music, plus popular vocals, coming up this Friday night for big band, swings, and other things. Louis Armstrong to Sarah Vaughan, Billie Holiday, Artie Shaw, Glenn Miller, coming up this Friday night, 7 until 9, on KRVS 88.7 and online at krvs.org.
From the University of Louisiana at Lafayette, this is KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.